You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to episode number 318 of Locked On Raptors for Thursday, April 19th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. Of course, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes. It's the easiest place to find all of the great shows from all the people on the network. 30 teams, 30 shows. There's Locked On NBA, Locked On Fantasy, an endless treasure trove of content for you to put into your ears. So make sure you're doing that. And if you find a host that you like, find their show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all the places you can find podcasts, and rate and review. It's super helpful. It's nice. It helps to move up the rankings. It makes the shows more visible. And please do that if you find Locked On Raptors on those services. It's a really nice thing of you to do, to leave a rating or a review. It helps to move us up the rankings. It's good for the algorithm, at least so iTunes says so. So please do that. And thanks in advance for taking the time. All right, on today's show, I'm not going to lollygag here. We're doing a preview podcast of Game 3 with myself and Noah Getzel of Locked On Wizards. Of course, he was on last week to tee up the series. A week later, the Raptors are up 2-0 in the series, and things are feeling pretty good. We sort of talked about what to expect from Game 3, whether or not the Wizards have any moves they can make still, and sort of what's gone into the Raptors' 2-0 lead so far. So without further ado, here's the conversation with myself and Noah Getzel. Follow me on Twitter at WoodleySean. Please do that. And again, a quick reminder, ratings, reviews, it's so helpful, and I very much appreciate it. So here's the conversation with Noah. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back with another episode probably Saturday morning or Friday night after Game 3, so stay tuned for that. And until then, enjoy the conversation, and we'll talk to you next time on Locked On Raptors. Hey, it's Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors.
What's going on? This is Noah Getzel, Locked On Wizards host.
We are meeting up for a week apart. Lots of two games in between our last conversation. I'm assuming our outlooks on the series have kind of adjusted since then. I was pretty confident last week, so maybe mine hasn't, but I'm sure yours has. So yeah, we're just gonna kind of dive in here with the Locked On crossover, talking about Raptors Wizards and previewing Game 3, kind of looking back on what's happened so far. Noah, how has your mindset changed since we last spoke a week ago?
Well, you said the Raptors would win in 5, which mm-hmm. they still can. And yeah. I said the Wizards would win in 7. And, I mean, it's less likely for sure, but the Wizards do have 3 of the next potential 5 games at home. So mm-hmm. the Wizards haven't been great at home all year, but it's obviously a boost because the fans in Toronto are so amazing and you don't have Drake heckling everybody after every play, that I'm sure people got frustrated with that. Even though Kelly Oubre said he was cool with it, that Drake called him a bum, I would have liked to see, I don't know, it's kind of a difficult situation because you don't want to accept defeat and be like, yeah, whatever, I wasn't playing well, we lost the game, he can say whatever. But you also don't want to be a distraction and start talking about, okay, Drake is getting my head, when, it has nothing to do with that. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation. I'm not too happy right now. I'm happy with the way John Wall has been playing and Mike Scott, and other than that, not too many other players have showed up consistently. Markieff Morris, game 1, he was awesome. Mm-hmm. 22 points, 11 boards, 6 assists. Game 2, he shot it 7 times, 6 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist. Yeah, so, and then we'll talk about this, but Marcin Gortat might not even be a starter. He's combined for, I guess the first game he had 29 minutes, so that's a lot more than I expected, but game 2, only 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the start of the game is really going to dictate things here in game 3, because the Raptors are allowing 36 points in the first quarter, including that 44-point dominating effort in game 2. My biggest concern is that the Wizards just didn't learn from their mistakes after game 1. It was kind of a different ball game because you had DeMar going off for 37 after he was, a little bit more so held in check in the first game. What did he have? 20? Yeah, he had 17 points and shot poorly. But I think just the three-point line defense was pretty surprising to me because they allowed, 16 of 30 in the first game. So that's hitting 16 threes. And then in the first half alone of game 2, they allowed 11. So the Wizards truly didn't learn their lesson. A lot of guys were no-shows in Game 2, especially, All-Star Bradley Beal, who has played a ton of minutes over the course of the season. But there's a lot of issues going on with this Wizards team. It starts with the construction of the roster and ends with, certain players just not taking advantage of their minutes. Of course, there was some foul trouble with Beal and Wall, but I just feel like there was one thing that I was pleasantly surprised by, and I'm sure it caught you off guard too. Did you have any idea that Ty Lawson, coming straight out of China, would drop 14 points and 8 assists or whatever total he had?
No.
I think that was about right. Yeah, 14 points. Yeah, and he had 4 or 5 three-pointers.
No, I certainly did not expect that. It was pretty weird, considering he didn't even play in game one. I don't know. If I'm the Raptors, I'm probably okay with Ty Lawson coming in and, like, the Wizards having to depend on Ty Lawson for multiple games, if that's going to be a thing. But, yeah, no, like, shouts to him for coming in. I guess he's, like, trying to play to get himself back in the league, so there's lots of incentive for him. And, you know, he was great. You know, 4 or 5 from deep. I'm not sure we'll see that again, but it was a huge boost for them. I don't know. I'm at this point now when I'm looking at this series and kind of talking about what the next moves for the Wizards are going to be, and we're going to get into that in a bit. But, like, I'm just – maybe it's just the two games have gotten to my head a little bit, but I just feel like the Raptors kind of have this in hand. And it feels like anything the Wizards are going to try to throw out next, the Raptors are going to have a counter for. And I think, you know, while the game on Monday – was it Monday? I don't know. The days are all running together at this point. Monday night, yeah.
Tuesday?
It was a Tuesday? Yeah, okay, it was Tuesday, that's right. Again, days are nothing at this point because it's the playoffs and it doesn't matter. It's just either a game day or it's not. But yeah, no, I just felt like even though the Raptors only won by 11 and they let it to get to within 5 in the fourth quarter, it felt like whenever the Raptors were trying, it wasn't a contest. Like, Lucas Nogueira was a minus 19 in 5 minutes. So if you like do the math on that, they were a plus... what, 30 in the other, you know, 43 minutes of the game. And I just think...
all players were minus, actually, except for DeLon Wright was even. He was, you know... And then, plus 32 for Ibaka, plus 27 for Valanciunas, plus 27 for Lowry, plus 23 for DeRozan. That's ungodly numbers. I don't think he'll repeat that, but who knows?
Yeah, the starters were outstanding, and they've been really good, I think, the last couple weeks heading into the playoffs, and then now... it's just that lineup's really gone well together. And I was going back and watching a bit of DeRozan's game today, just kind of all of his possessions, and I don't know, it just felt like the Wizards they came into the series with a bit of a plan where they were going to try to trap Kyle and DeMar and get the ball out of their hands, because that's been the book against the Raptors in past playoffs, and then it didn't work. Again, you mentioned the 16 threes. You know, that's maybe a bit higher than you'd expect, but also a lot of those looks were completely wide open because it was coming in 4-on-3 situations, and, like, those were looks that the Raptors were very happy to settle with. And then in Game 2, it felt like the trapping kind of went away, particularly when it came to DeRozan. Most of his possessions, you know, either they were going under on him, or, you know, or they were doing some ISO stuff and they weren't really inviting the traps or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of it was... the Wizards having a tough time fighting through or under or over screens, and DeMar getting a little bit of space and either pulling up for three or mid-range jumpers, or, you know, a couple instances where he just found easy lanes to the basket. There was that dunk that he had, I think, in the fourth quarter where he kind of denied the screen from Jonas. You know, John Wall got, like, totally tripped up by DeMar's, like, fake left and then went right, and then DeMar just had a complete blow-by run to the rim, and just felt like there was no plan defensively from the Wizards the way there was early in the series. And, you know, that leads to DeMar having 37 points on 28 used possessions. Like, that's just insane efficiency. So I feel like the Raptors have kind of shown both, you know, if you're going to trap, they're going to be able to set guys up. Kyle and DeMar didn't have huge offensive games in Game 1, but they combined for 15 assists, and the rest of the sort of supporting cast did the job. And, you know, when they weren't going to trap, DeMar's just going to go off because he's DeMar DeRozan and he's really good, and he's just kind of reached that level with his play. So, I don't know, what do you think the Wizards do next in their defensive coverage? Like, do you see them changing things up? Do you see them getting more aggressive again? Like, what do you think is next for them?
Well, one thing that'll help is giving a few more minutes to Mike Scott if he's in the starting lineup, just because it kind of, you're a little bit restricted when you have more of an immobile big, because the Raptors set a ton of screens. So you have, you know, I saw a lot of the game, Markieff Morris, like, happened to be matched up on DeMar. They just kept setting screens to utilize the best mismatch that they could find. So if you have someone who can move his feet a little bit better and then, you know, make you work more on defensive end when the Raptors are trying to guard Mike Scott, I think that's got to be an advantage. And, you know, you might sacrifice a little bit of rim protection, but really, Gortat is not a rim protector, so I'm not too concerned there. Mike Scott is a physical defensive player, as you saw the way he body checked Kyle Lowry. I think that should help, hopefully. I don't know if he's actually going to start. It's just been floated around a little bit. I'm sure that Gortat wouldn't be too happy. It would, you know, be the end of his regime if he's not even playing in the playoffs game. So we'll see about that. But I think, you just have to give Mike Scott some more minutes, even though he's only started one game. The NBA is going small. It's going to shooters. You know, everyone needs to be able to stretch the floor and guard multiple positions. And when you have Gortat in the game, even Mahimni in the game, it's really tough to do that. So I would like to see, you know, more action for Mike Scott, but I think their bigger issue is at play. And two huge ones are the guys making $20+ million a year. Mm-hmm. Bradley Beal needs to play like an all-star, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, he had some foul trouble. He only ended up playing, I think, 25 minutes throughout the game, which is nothing for a guy who plays 40 all the time. What was it? All right, so he played 41 in game one, but mm-hmm. then, yeah, just 25. He had four fouls. So Beal has got to be more aggressive, and it can't just be him expecting to hit shots the times that Wall finds him. I want to see better ball movement. And then Otto Porter, it's really asking a lot because he's not the type of player who wants to go out and make plays for himself, but he's got to do a better job of, you know, stretching the floor and running out in transition for fast break opportunities, and layups, you know, crashing the offensive glass. He's great at that, getting those hustle plays and just spotting up for open threes. He's one of the best shooters, but he's only attempted 3 threes in the series so far in 2 games. So I would love to see them get more involved offensively. I can't really knock John Wall because he's averaging ridiculous numbers. I think, like, how many assists a game? 12 assists a game. But, you know, you just kind of get the sense that when he has the ball so much and when he's trying to force it a little bit, it kind of puts the other players in a bit of a tougher position where, you know, when you don't have the ball in your hands, you like, aren't as much a part of the offense. It kind of strangles you a little bit. So I'd like to see more ball movement. I know the Wizards are capable, and they just need to play to their potential. And I think, obviously, the Raptors are one of the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. I'd say it's them and the Cavs, even though the Cavs narrowly squeaked out their 100-97 victory. I feel like LeBron scored 99 of those 100 points the other night. I just want to see, once the Wizards get one win, then it'll all be downhill. But it's kind of like in a game, until you score once, like, everything's just a little bit tense and on ice and you can't really relax. So they've had good stretches, they've made good comebacks, but yeah, I think you're right in a sense that when the Raptors knew they had to turn on the Jets and, you know, pull away, they haven't had any issues so far. What else have you been talking about this week in terms of, you know, how the Raptors have been able to just be so dominant? What else have you seen aside from, I guess, the ability to get through traps and find the open man and involve, you know, all of your three-point shooters and bench players?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I think Dwayne Casey deserves a lot of credit for how he's turned all the cranks at the right times and put in the proper lineups when they've needed them. Like, in crunch time, after the Wizards made that comeback, he had a lineup out there because the Wizards were going super small, I believe, with Scott at the five. It might have been like Porter at the four, if I'm not mistaken, or Porter or Oubre, someone like that. They were going super small. Maybe it wasn't Porter, because I think Lawson was out there instead of Porter. Either way, they were very small. The Raptors went with Ibaka at the five, with DeLon Wright, CJ Miles, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry. Tons of ball handling, tons of shooting, and then the rim protection that Serge provides, and I think that was kind of a trump card. And I think that's sort of just been the story of the series, is that every lineup the Wizards throw out, the Raptors have something they can go to because they have so many guys on hand and so many different skill sets. They have something they can throw out there in a five-man lineup to kind of counter what the Wizards are doing. Like, even if they, you know, if they go to the Morris Scott front court, which I think, you know, would make some sense considering how bad Gortat's been, and how, you know, normally the reason you have Gortat in against the Raptors is because he owns Jonas Valanciunas, and that just hasn't happened. Jonas has had a really good series. He was excellent in game two. And completely, you know, torched Gortat when he was in there for those 12 minutes. You know, if they go to the Morris Scott front court, which I think on merit they should probably do, you know, I think the Raptors are kind of fine sticking with Ibaka, Valanciunas in that situation because the rebounding advantage is so pronounced. And, you know, with the lack of rim protection you get with those two in there, Kyle and DeMar are free to sort of drive a little bit more often. Kyle, most of the season, kind of didn't drive very often. He was, you know, very much just a three-point shooter. Like, I think 67% of his shots were from three this season. There's been a little bit more in terms of attacking the basket when those smaller lineups are in there. I think he's comfortable doing that. And then DeMar has just kind of done whatever he wants and gotten word to the spots that he's wanted to go, especially in game two. And, you know, even if they go with the Morris Scott front court, you know, and say, for example, Scott stretches out Valanciunas to the point where he has to come off the floor, the Raptors can just throw Ibaka out of the five and say, you know, Miles or Siakam at the four. They can kind of play super big, medium, super small. They can kind of go all over the place and throw the action back at the Wizards. And, you know, we mentioned the potential of Gortat getting benched and the starting five being more, the starting front court being Morris and Scott. Like, it hasn't been super successful so far, despite how good Scott's been. 24 minutes together, Morris and Scott as a two-man lineup has a 94.4 offensive rating, a 103.5 defensive rating, minus 9.1 per 100 possessions, and a 43.5 rebound percentage, which is just not good enough. You're not rebounding at a high enough rate there to justify the, you know, you're not scoring at a high enough rate to justify the bad rebounding there. And then, you know, you'd say, oh, it's small sample, 24 minutes, but over the course of the full season, 150 minutes, they were a minus 16.4 net rating with a 41.6 rebounding percentage. So I wonder how sustainable that'll be for more than just a couple minutes here and there to maybe catch the Raptors off guard. Because I think Casey, you know, like I mentioned off the top of this answer, like I think he's done a really good job of just deploying the right lineups at the right times and sort of just knocking down any sort of Wizards flourish with, you know, his own sort of lineup of its own that can kind of go on a run to counter whatever the Wizards are doing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the depth is a huge issue, and it's scary that, you know, every single player can come in and make a big impact. You don't really see guys having off games, even though, like, Fred VanVleet, who you said is the bench player who will probably have the biggest impact, he did next to nothing in Game 2 as he returned, and still, it was largely not even a contest until the very end of the third quarter and a little bit in the fourth quarter. I wish that the Wizards could have that type of production off the bench, even though the bench players outscored the starters 63 to, I think, 50. I can't remember. It was like 59. I don't remember exactly. Yeah. 57, maybe. Yeah, whatever. But, yeah, they outscored the starters. I would love to see Satoransky having a bigger impact because he hasn't really got his opportunity yet. Over the course of the regular season, in just 22 minutes game, he was averaging 7.2 points, almost 4 assists, 3.2 rebounds, and shooting 46.5% from downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a tough reintegration since Wall has come back. It's been tough to find him minutes. It's been tough to see him play confidently once again. So, you know, absolutely, there's a lot of streaky players on the Wizards, and everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people have to be having big nights. Otherwise, there's just no contributions. For the Raptors, you don't really have that issue because so many different younger players are able to bring a lot to the table. So, you know, even if your 6th, 7th, and 8th man have an off night, you know, you still basically don't lose a step in guys 9, 10, 11. So it's, mm-hmm. it's going to be an issue, but I feel like things are going to tilt because the Wizards are playing in desperation mode.
Yeah.
And every time that happened throughout the course of the regular season, you know, they didn't really rise to the occasion until the stakes got really high. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a much closer game. If not, you know, do you expect the Wizards to steal one of these victories? Or are you kind of leaning towards sweep at this stage?
So I still am going to hold on to Raptors in five, but mm-hmm. like I can't deny that it's felt kind of sweepy. And just sort of hearing the way the Wizards have talked. Yeah, like the way like the Wizards have talked, and like Scott Brooks kind of feels like he's answering the same questions about things that he's kind of doing strangely or things the Wizards are doing poorly in every media availability he does. And I'm just not sure how many answers or moves he has left to make. I'm actually writing about this right now. Just like I'm not sure what the next move is and if there is something they can do to sort of unlock the series. Like it's not like they have a. As long as they're the Bucks and have like a Giannis at the five thing they can unlock, or like even the Raptors last year against the Bucks in the first round where they were like, all right, we're just going to bench Jonas and start Norman Powell, and that changed the complexion of the series entirely. I'm just not sure the Wizards have that move. But yeah, like I would expect they'll come out tough. I mean, if the Raptors win on Friday, I feel like it'll probably be a sweep. But if the Wizards can take that one, then I'm sure Raptors fans will be nervous because Raptors fans scare easily. And, you know, it'll depend on the manner in which they lose, of course. But I'm expecting the Wizards' best punch on Friday, for sure. Here's a question for you. What is the Wizards' best five right now? Like, what is the five guys you want on the court for the most number of minutes in the game, if at all possible?
That's a tough question because some guys are great some nights and just atrocious the others. I think a good lineup right now in terms of the way that guys are playing would probably be, well, just based on game two, I would say Wall, Beal, Oubre, Porter, and Mike Scott to close the game.
Right.
Just because Markieff Morris, you really don't really know what you're going to get, even though he's a bit more physical in terms of his rebounding than Mike Scott. Yeah, I guess that lineup would be tough because you'd basically be depending on Porter to get the majority of your rebounds. Oubre is a decent rebounder as well, but I just like the flexibility there in terms of, you know, ability to switch one through four. It's, you know, it's between that or subbing Morris for Porter and just going with, I'm sorry, Morris for Oubre and then going Wall, Beal, Porter, and then either, you know, Morris or Mike Scott playing the four and five positions. That would be my ideal lineup. And the trouble you run into is there aren't that many guys who can contribute outside of those six people. So that's definitely an issue. So about the sweep, one thing you need to keep in mind is it was a couple years ago, but the Wizards faced the Bulls in the first round of a playoff series. I think it was 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
In Chicago, they went behind 0-2 and then came back to win four straight. Mm-hmm. They eventually lost to the Indiana Pacers, the team with like Paul George, and I think they had either George Hill or Monte Ellis. It was a solid team. They won a ton of games that year under Frank Vogel. But I'm just saying, like, it looks bleak right now, but one victory is all it takes to spark this team. So, you know, don't rule anything out, especially because you said your fan base, I don't know about the players and coaches and all that, but the fan base can get skittish after a single loss. So, you know, I think that the Wizards have all the tools and the talent in place to make it a more competitive series and win a couple games. It just comes down to fundamentals of defense in my mind, because that's kind of what sets the tone for the entire team. So it's been poor communication off of pick and rolls. It hasn't been a lot of guys helping out. There has been some foul trouble. Of course, John Wall complained about all the no calls that he was receiving, that he wasn't getting when he was on the offensive end in game one. But I think the defense is what's going to be the deciding factor, as it's been throughout the year, because the Wizards have a ton of guys who can score in double figures, you know. And throughout this series, of course, your Raptors are averaging 122 points a game, but the Wizards weren't far behind. I think it was like 106 points in game one, 119 in game two. So it's not like they're getting shut down by a stifling defense. Mm-hmm. It's just been that, you know, they've been satisfied with trading buckets instead of getting stops.
Yeah, that's fair. The Raptors, I think, again, I wonder how, like, locked in they were late in the game. And, like, you have to be locked in for a playoff game, and it can come back to bite you, certainly. And that was an issue they had down the stretch in games where they would kind of be ahead of teams or just, like, against teams that they felt like they could beat. And then they would just, like, kind of take the foot off the gas on defense for a bit and then win games 130, 125. So that's a concern for sure. And the way John Wall played, if there's a concern I have, it's Wall finding the form that he found in the second half of game two over the course of a full game, because he was horrifying. He was doing everything. He was, you know, the Raptors were content to give him mid-range shots. He was making them after, you know, he wasn't a particularly good mid-range shooter this season. He was getting to the rim and scoring around the basket a lot more effectively than he did in game one. Got to the line a whole bunch, and the Raptors had some issues fouling, which is always an issue with them, especially with like Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl, and then Bebe Noguera, who comes in and they get like 5 fouls in 5 minutes, because that's what Bebe does. If there's a concern, it's definitely John Wall kind of turning it on. And, like, Beal and Wall having a great game in concert is going to be tough to deal with. But I still come back to the rest of the guys that are around them. I don't know what my answer would be to the question I asked you about what the best five is. Because I just... You know what the Wizards could really use? is Serge Ibaka. Like, a rim-protecting big man who can, who's just like... because Mike Scott and I think Markieff Morris are kind of too in-between to be good rim protectors. Like, they can space you out a bit, but they can't really protect the rim. Whereas Gortat and Mahinmi, like, they're just
they
rim protectors.
Rebounds.
Yeah. They like, they're very traditional centers as opposed to being able to stretch things out. And, like, they could just... like, if Jason Smith were just, like... to just, like, do a bunch of steroids and become really good for a couple games. Like, that would be very handy, I think, for the Wizards.
Wizards have enough steroid issues as is. I think you're just making me bang my head against the wall because the Wizards were so close to landing Al Horford.
Yeah, that would be very good for this team.
It's like, oh, Jan Mahinmi is basically the same thing. Like, we'll be fine. No, he got his hands of bricks. He can't shoot outside the paint. He gets in foul trouble just about every game. Jan Mahinmi essentially didn't even start any games, and he still doesn't really start any games in Washington, so totally different players. I wish that, you know, the Wizards could have just conceded the fact that they weren't going to get Kevin Durant and maybe tried to do something a little bit more realistic. I feel like, I don't know how much a football fan you are, but the Redskins would always do the same thing to try and make, like, home run free agency signings, and, you know, it would just be guys who are over the hill, and it wouldn't quite work out. So, yeah, block shots is a big point of attention, because in two games you guys have 15 block shots, 7 in game 1 and then 8 in game 2. The Wizards have combined for 6. I feel like John Wall has most of those, unfortunately. I've got to double check the stats, but yeah, it's definitely a challenge, because you know, as much as Wizards Twitter and Wizards fans want to bash on Jan Mahinmi and Marcin Gortat, they do two things really well. They set picks well to get guys open and help the offense flow that way, even though they can't quite score as much on their own. And then they do a great job of boxing out. So even if they're not getting the rebound, they might be stopping Serge Ibaka or Jonas Valanciunas, who had, I think, like 13, 14 rebounds in 23 minutes the other game. And, you know, those are very underrated things when you look at a box score if you're just stopping someone else from getting a rebound. But at the end of the day, it's stuff that is appreciated. And yeah, when you have a 55-40 rebounding difference in game 2, you're right. Like, you need someone who can have it both ways, who can protect the rim, but also be rangy enough to guard, you know, small forwards or shooting guards for a couple of seconds off that shot clock as you switch. So definitely a personnel issue. Blame Ernie Grunfeld for that one. I had a podcast earlier with kind of discussing what the ramifications would be. I don't know if I want to bring it up because, you know, the series is far from over, but just what would happen if the Wizards lose? Like, how do you change things and improve over the offseason? Because I think since, like, 2010, there was a good article in the Washington Post how the Wizards and Raptors started in, like, the same place. It was the year that the Wizards drafted John Wall. I think you might have gotten, like, DeRozan that year as well, or around that time frame. But you guys have just been building and getting younger and adding pieces and, like, looking towards the future every year. Whereas as the Wizards, they, you know, they got their 3 lottery picks, and then the only other draft pick since then was Kelly Oubre, who they traded for. And there's just been way too many dumps of, okay, let's win right now because it's All-Star break and we're, like, teetering on the edge of playoff form, we need to make the playoffs, we'll just trade away our future and first round pick for a guy like Bojan Bogdanovic for 2-3 months. So lots of personnel issues going on with the Wizards. But at the same time, you know, I feel like it's, I don't want to make light of any sort of emotional wellness disorders, but I feel like the Wizards are kind of bipolar, because, and it makes the fan base bipolar too, because they play so well and you're thinking, okay, Eastern Conference Finals, or maybe even be knocking off LeBron. Of course, the Wizards won't play the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals this year, just because of the way things set up. But it's either that or this team is bound for the lottery. Like, we can't beat the Phoenix Suns. We can't beat the Brooklyn Nets. It's ridiculous, the discrepancy that the Wizards have in terms of playing down to competition. And it hasn't really showed yet in this Raptors series, but, you know, they can play with the best teams. They beat the Raptors twice in the regular season. I feel like now that the door is starting to close on them, you're going to see the fight or flight mode, and you're going to see the best performance from the Wizards, at least as a biased fan. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a good game tomorrow. Like, close playoff games are really fun. I'm looking forward to it. I think we should probably wrap it there, though. We've gone pretty long.
Yeah.
Do you have any other parting shots before we wrap this thing up?
I wish the Wizards would keep their mouths shut, but more so, I just, Drake frustrates me so much. I love his music, but he's such a pest and a menace, and I can't stand him on the sidelines thinking that he's cool with all the players and, like, talking to them after every single play. It's definitely a sixth man edge that your team brings there.
I will hear no besmirchment of, is that a word? I don't know. Of Aubrey Graham, our greatest son. He's a beautiful person. I hope he's courtside at the Wizards game, as I'm sure he can pull those strings. And yeah,
would you ever change the team name from the Raptors to the Toronto Drakes?
No, it's fine. I mean, that could be an option, I guess, down the road if things get really bad. But this is fun, man. Make sure you're checking out Locked On Wizards, subscribing, rating, reviewing to Locked On Wizards on iTunes. Same with Locked On Raptors. I'm going to have a piece tomorrow talking about how I don't think the Wizards really have any moves left. So stay tuned for that if you'd like. Noah, do you have anything you need to plug?
I think we've covered it. Thanks so much for this opportunity. It was great to chat with you again. And maybe, you know, after we can chat before game five, if there is a game five, we'll see what's going on after these next two here in DC. If you don't follow me already, Noah_GOETZEL is where you can find me. And aside from the podcast 5 days a week, Locked On Wizards is also on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. So cool. Yeah, that's all I got. Thanks again.
Awesome, man. We'll talk soon.